atmosphere, ocean observations from air deployed drifters during typhoons.
I like to acknowledge ONR for substantial support for this experiment, and a little bit of NOAA because many of these development were based using NOAA. So let me move on, a quick outline, description of the papers and how we did the IHOP fieldwork. Observations, I'm going to focus on SST, subsurface temperature, and drifters are nice because they also make atmospheric measurements of the wind and atmospheric pressure. And a few words on the new wind sensors that we use for this experiment and how that compares with the topping source data, conclusion and future plans. And that also answers Eric's specific question about how, what are we going to do with the data and how we're going to share the data. Well, through the years we've done quite a bit of deployments now. Peter started in 2003 with Fabian, and you see the list of hurricanes and typhoon samples so far. So these are the last two we did. We put most of our resources in Hanapi. We knew that was a great experiment, and because the cruise was out there, we decided to essentially put most of the resources in the way. And we did a little bit of Malacca's with essentially six temperature swings and six dBs, essentially to measure atmospheric pressure. That also was in the way. As I mentioned before, as I mentioned before, in 2010 we transitioned the wind speed measurements from the hydrophone type measurements to the Wilsonic anemometer, and it worked very well. As you will see, the results are good, although Hanapi was not a super typhoon, so we still need the verification of what happens when the winds are stronger than what we observe in Hanapi. Overall success rate of our instruments is 92%, combining all the deployments done throughout the years. Quickly, as schematic, most of you are familiar with that, but that's what we call the super radars that has actually lots of the measurements with ABCPs and about 30 temperature sensors from 0 to 150 meters. In terms of atmospheric measurements, you see here the Gilsonic anemometer and atmospheric pressure, and there's a wind vane that keeps it in direction. So, remarkably, those little balls, although they're in these multiple ways, you know, 5 to 9 meters high, they're still able to measure the wind direction. Of course, you need to do a lot of the correction by finger down. The second type of instrument we deployed was the ADOS, which is a simplified version of the super ADOS, so no loss of measurements this time, and a coarser vertical temperature resolution on the 10 sensors with a space of 50 meters, and still with the sea surface temperature, wind, and atmospheric pressure measurements. And then the two simple instruments we deployed that are part of the big array in the wake of Hanapi, where the SET2T, that's a standard SET drifters with three temperature sensors, SST, one at the top of the draw, 12.5 meters, and the other one at the bottom of the draw, 17.5 meters. And the idea there was to essentially measure the temperature gradient at the edge of the waves, and you will see that over the front scheme. And then a bunch of SVTDs, just for the atmospheric pressure measurements ahead of the platform. What was measured, just to recap, in terms of atmospheric measurements, we had air pressure from the other four instruments, wind velocity, and solar radiation on the superators. That didn't work too great. We probably had 3 days of shortwave radiation measurements. So we hope to get more measurements from other instigators. In terms of ocean, SST, all across the board, and subsurface temperature, Lagrangian velocity from the Lagrangian instruments, and the super drifters also measured three-dimensional velocity from 0 to 150 meters, and with a 4 meters resolution. So thanks to Eric and all the other people in Monterey, we managed to do to perform a rather complicated deployment scheme. The first line was deployed ahead of the platform, about 1 day ahead, with pumps, floats, and then off. And then we did the second deployment in the wake with the SVP2T. So we tried to get the edge for the wake. Then there was a third deployment that included the super jitters.
Use the other one.
Just a separate one.
There's a separate one on the podium.
Oh, this one?
No,
on the podium.
On the podium.
It's okay. It's working out. It's fine. So this was the third one in the middle of the week, and then we focused on the cold blob that was mentioned before, and what was the cold blob. So super jitters are in red, only three, not two or three other work. All right, now. This is a mapping of the SST. So that's a picture of the wave that was also shown by Wenqi before. That's repeating what was said before about 2.5 degrees cooling. And what we're plotting here is the same map with now the wind vector superimposed. Now, surprisingly, if you remember in the previous meetings, it was presented that it was mentioned that the wind tends to rotate inward towards the center of the storm when you get in this climate here. That certainly was the case of Rita. It doesn't seem to be the case for Fanati, so that's an interesting difference that we would like to investigate to see why there is such a difference in the rotation of the wind. These are the tracks of the drifters that were mentioned, shown a couple of times already. This is the best track we have for now for Fanati. And we see a lot of loopings, and from what has been said before, these are probably the natural origins. We haven't done the spectral analysis, but that can easily be done. And that's in contrast with sea level. Okay, that's a sea level anomaly from Aviso, the grid. And it's not a surprise to see that the grid doesn't follow this heading very well here and this one here. And now it was very interesting what Wenqi mentioned, and also Luke showed about the jet now, and that may explain why some of these drifters are really taken off this one. So that's a nice finding that would put our observation in context. This is a vertical section of temperature. This is from the deployment ahead of the storm. What we're looking at here is the pre-storm condition, and this is the post-storm condition, I guess, one day after the typhoon sent went over the array. And as this is very consistent with what Wenqi showed, you see the upwind here and then the mixer here on the right side of the storm track. And again, that's another way to look at that. This is now following one of the indices to the temperature string and the maximum cooling that happened right after the tide that went over, and it was about 2.5 degrees. So all is consistent. Atmospheric pressure measurements. This is a plot. These are now time here. And atmospheric pressure on this axis, and you see that the minimum pressure was 940, as measured by the indices. And then we have much more data from the SVPs that needs a little bit more correction, but there will be added data. And you see the atmospheric type density map to the other typhoon. That's another way to look at the sea level pressure. And now this time we are plotting our observations with the Robinson's observations. This is a very good match. And we do have quite a bit more observations than the Robinson's. All right. Now the wind. So these are, again, a comparison between the Robinson's wind data and our observations from the GEO solid sensor. And you can look for yourself. It worked, maximum wind about 40 meters per second. There is a remarkable agreement. It's not a super strong wind, so we would like to test the system in stronger hurricanes eventually. But the agreement is rather good. And here, what I'm showing in blue is the data measured by these drifters before the storm arrives. So you can see there is some intensification over the 24 some hours that takes for the typhoon to go over. So here we're looking in front of the typhoon, and here is looking the way of the typhoon. So the winds are a little bit stronger one day after that. And so that was very nice. You know, I still get a lot of skepticism and people saying, hey, how can you measure the wind so close to the ocean surface? Remember that the buoy is sticking out just 8 inches of the water surface. And what is the water surface there? That's a good question, because it's a complicated environment. But still, if you clean up the data on board so you know when you're underwater, so it's got those measurements. And you use an empirical screening factor that was worked out with measurements of California, then you can essentially correct and bring your measurements up to the right level. So this was not actually calibrated for this experiment, but was calibrated with measurements done in California in 2009. And that's a straight application. Now, I've done my homework as Eric asked, okay? what we will submit, this is the atmospheric data, this is the oceanographic data. So we will submit for data sets for everybody. But the preliminary data set is online already, so you can access it if you want. I don't recommend it because it's not cleaned up yet, but you can do it. And talk to Jan if you want to grab the data. We expect to have a full quality control data set available by the end of September 2011. As I said, contact Jan or myself for the data, and we plan to host it in our own website, so perhaps we can put a link to the ITOP data repository to our website, or we can do it at the different way if people prefer it. All right. So plan for the analysis, we would really like to interact with modelers in the sense that we want to understand what is the impact of subsurface observations on the prediction of the field. So really this is a call for whoever is interested, we really want to do it and come up with an answer, a strong answer, and also come up with what is the optimal sampling scheme for doing this kind of experiments. Because we have some limited resources, and is one line enough? We want to put the second line, 12 hours at the home, 24 hours apart. So does it really make a difference? So all those things would like, we would like to evaluate. And then of course working with Duke and everybody else on the increased application problem. So these are the two main areas we envision working on for the next year and a half. And well, some conclusions here. Essentially a summary of what I said. Thank you, and any questions?
Yes, Peter?
Comments. One is that folks on Guam, the Air Force guys have a continuity data set there as well, besides the project. But second comment is I wonder if we could use the same technique that we use in calibrating the SFMR, and calibrating your acoustic wind sensor there. And that was, we used the WL150, not the MBL, and an empirical relation between WL150 and the actual 10 meter wind. Another way to do it is, since this is the first time that we had sond data in 10 years, it's the first time we had sond data, sond wind data, all the way to the surface, we'd use the actual measure.
I think Ian looked into that, his stops at about 40 meters. I don't know whether this is the quality control data set.
That's not the QC data set, that's the raw data set. And those heights have been corrected. That's when you integrate down from aircraft flight level. There's an error in the height at which the sound is dropped to 700 milligrams. So what you got to do is, what AOL does, is take the surface pressure and integrate upward.
All right.
Then you get the correct heights.
We certainly something didn't work, so we look into that. Certainly, yeah, this is about it.
Should we?
telescope, we should go back and
you know, but Vita, you know, that was the lean extra. They have an overabundance of stuff, 400, you know, the outside.
Set up the next talk.